Passengers of motor vehicles put seat belts in certain vehicles, and they're basically passenger cars and your Suburbans, those type of things. Vehicles that are built under the truck, they're truck standards, basically, which includes buses. The only requirement for a seat belt is in the driver compartment itself. There is no requirement at all in the rest of the bus at all, or whatever type of vehicle that may be.
Mr. Chairman, just a point of clarification, this bill does not deal with whether seat belts have to be in or don't have to be in vehicles. It merely states that if they are installed, they have to meet standards. That installation has to meet standards. And what it's doing is eliminating exemptions from those standards. Right now, if certain buses have them installed, they're not required to meet any standards. And now we're saying if they are installed in any of these buses, they have to meet some kind of standards, either ours or the Department of Education or State Board of Higher Education.
So that the seat belts, then they just can't be any old thing. They've got to be able to contain those that are strapped in sufficiently and so forth. Representative Peterson.
I guess I'm curious, is there a lot of misuse of this, people putting in seat belts that are below any kind of standards? I mean, I thought seat belts themselves were sort of standard, so I guess I need an explanation of, you know, how this is being misused.
Mr. Chair, Representative Peterson, if there is a problem or how big of a problem it is, I would not be able to tell you unless we actually went around to every outlet that sold seat belts and checked to make sure that every one of them that they're selling does meet the standard. We have found different items of equipment items that do not meet standards, and we have informed the manufacturer of those or the people that are selling those that they don't. We have had several different people that have called the division asking about whether or not they had to have seat belts put in a van when they're because of the new child restraint law, whether or not they had to put seat belts in the van so that the children were seat belted up. And we'd explain to them that if it was manufactured prior to 72 or whatever the federal standard date is on that particular vehicle, no, they did not have to put them in. If the vehicle was manufactured after that point, yes, they were supposed to be in there. We have nothing in the law that stops anybody from taking them out if they take them out. People would ask, well, what type of a belt would they put in? We would recommend that they find a belt that talks about that it meets the federal safety standards. Whether or not, you know, how many might be out there where somebody is selling a product that doesn't meet the standard, I couldn't tell you.
If I may continue, what I should ask is, what brought this to your attention that made you come in with this change in the section?
Mr. Chair, Representative Peterson, it was the type of phone calls that we were getting. It was also, there had been some school districts that have called me, and I end up referring them to the Department of Education, but they would call and ask about putting seat belts in, and I would tell them that they're exempt from any type of a seat belt standard.
Standard.
Right. And that I could, you know, I would recommend if they're going to put seat belts in that they use one that does meet the standard that we've adopted, but there's nothing that would make them do that, and I referred them to the Department of Education.
If I may go back to what Representative Young was discussing, on page 2 in section, on line 9 through 11, it picks up what we delete from lines 12, or from lines 13 and 14, but nothing is picked up for line 12, commercial buses. I mean, I can see where you're moving the authority or stating the authority for the two others that are deleted on lines 13 and 14, but where do we pick up A, or do we pick up A? Or did I miss something somewhere?
Mr. Chairman, what this basically does is, for the school buses, it establishes that they are subject to the State Board of Higher Education or Department of Education. For the rest of them, it is merely deleting them, because this section already says, except for these, they have to meet standards, and it's just deleting the exemption. So by deleting this information, then these vehicles then become subject to these standards. Section 3 covers vehicles that have to be subject to division standards.
Yeah, I understand that.
Okay, with the exception of what is under sub 2, which is this, the school buses, the commercial buses, the school buses, and school activity vehicles. Okay, by bracketing out commercial buses and school buses and school activity buses, the commercial buses are no longer under the section then as an exemption, and so they're subject. But we couldn't just do that with the school buses, because we didn't want to subject them to our rules. We wanted to subject them to the Department of Education.
So there are no rules for commercial buses?
Commercial buses are subject to our, by deleting them here, they become subject to this section. And so they're subject to the rules of the division rules.
Mr. Chair, Representative Young. So one option would be to leave commercial buses and add in their buses used in the transport of people to and from work that did not fall under the standard at the time they were manufactured. I would really feel more comfortable if you just kept your hands off of the buses that people use, taking people to and from work and those types of vehicles. And as far as I'm concerned, I don't see the justification for putting commercial buses under the regulations.
Mr. Chairman, I'm not sure I follow what you're asking here. Section 2 basically starts out by saying, or excuse me, sub 2 on beginning on line 9 of page 2. It says this section does not apply, and if you read it without the changes, it says this section does not apply to the following vehicles, meaning all of these rules that are current or standards that are in Section 3 do not apply to the following vehicles. And currently, in the current statute, it does not apply to commercial buses, it does not apply to school buses with a loaded weight of 10,000 pounds or more, and it does not apply to school activity buses.
Yes, but Joanne, prior to the changes in Section 2, line 9, 10, and 11, it read this section does not apply to, and then it lists A, B, C. And one of the things that this section does not apply to, A, is commercial buses.
Correct.
And now you're taking that out and saying that this section then does apply to commercial buses.
Correct. In other words, if you install a seatbelt in a commercial bus, it would have to meet standards.
All right. If you do.
Right.
Yeah, my problem is back to the Berry people again. I'm not sure that a low-backed bus seat could be retrofitted and meet your standards, because I don't know what your standards are. And if somebody wants to go halfway and provide some safety features, I just don't think that we want you meddling in that.
So, what's the solution here?
Mr. Chair, Representative Young, the standards, the federal standards that the division has adopted covers, if I remember right, there's about three different types of seat belt systems. You have the shoulder harness, and you have the lap system, and I forget offhand what the other one is.
if someone was going to be installing these in a school bus or a commercial bus in the seats that a normal person sits in, probably they would be installing a lap belt only. There would not be a shoulder harness, because you'd have to be able to structurally have the system, the wall on the side of the bus to fasten the shoulder harness to.
Madam Chair?
Yes, Representative Jones.
Pardon me, Representative Young. One of the confusing things, and I'm hearing some concern from Representative Young and also Representative Norris, in section 815.055 on page 243, it really doesn't list your actual rules as they relate to standards, possibly before we act on this bill. And I have some concerns about this section more than I had before. It might be helpful to have those standards before us.
Madam Chair?
Yes,
one question. Say you have a rig that was not used for passengers, maybe a van, and you decide you're going to use that rig to take people out into the woods to work. So you put seats in it, and it's set up to put the seats in. And you say, well, while I'm doing that, I'm going to have seat belts put in. So you take it down someplace, and you want the seats installed, and want seat belts put in. Would they have to check and find out what the standards were to do that? Or possibly, say the van tips over, because the workers' comp claim, is somebody going to come back on them and say, well, you probably wouldn't have had to put seat belts in, technically, perhaps, but you did put them in, and then they didn't comply, so now you're out of compliance, or you've done something wrong. Say if a bus that was built in 72 would have had seat belts, was not, and I'm talking about a large van, didn't have seat belts because it didn't have seats. You go ahead and put the seats in and then put seat belts in. If they're not up, I mean, what would your procedure be?
Madam Chair, Representative Young, most persons that are in the business of installing seating systems or seat belts in a vehicle I would assume would be buying, and the assumption may be wrong, but I would assume that they would be buying products that do meet safety standard requirements. If, and as I've said before, we've had people that have called us wanting to know whether or not they had to install seatbelts, and we tell them no. They ask if they do install seatbelts, what do they have to meet, and we tell them, depending on what the vehicle is, the type of vehicle, whether or not it has to meet our state standard or not. If a vehicle is manufactured without seatbelts, there's no requirement even from the federal government to have a seatbelt in it. There's an exemption, right?
No, Madam Chair, I'm not saying, sometimes I get the feeling you approach things on the legalities and everything else. I'm just saying that the guy decides to put seats in and says, while I'm putting seats in, I may as well go ahead and put seat belts in. What kind of rigmarole does he have to go through to be in compliance if we pass all of this? Can he pull seat belts out of a wrecked vehicle that he has and bolt them to the floor and that's fine? Or how do you deal with that?
Madam Chair, Representative Young, there's nothing stopping a person from taking seat belts out of another vehicle and putting them in it. They are supposed to be marked. The seat belt itself are supposed to be marked. I'm not completely sure where, if the instance you described where somebody put seatbelts in their vehicle and they ended up getting in an accident, and it was proven that the seat belts did not meet any type of a standard. Exactly what our division's role would be.
Perhaps you could get back to us on that. It feels like a valid question. Representative Norris.
That brought up a question I had in advance here about marking. On page 1 of 2207, lines 29 through 31, it's an offense that blah, 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 if a device is not marked as required under 815.055. I have read 815.055 twice, and I can find no reference to any marking requirements. Now, that's old wording, and it's not part of the change we're considering, but if I were really concerned with this and I turned to this to find out what I was required to do, I don't see where I'd find it.
Representative Norris, what page are you on?
243, 815.055, right hand. Then it continues on the next page and I find no reference to a marking requirement. If I were in the business of selling seat belt safety harnesses and wanted to make sure I complied with the law, I think I might be left adrift there.
I might comment that Mr. Lee has gone to get the standards so that we can all at least have the standards to look at today.
But this would imply that the requirement is rather specific under 815.055.
I'm just looking, if I could just share some.
Representative Young.
One bill that I looked at putting in had to do with making it mandatory to wear seat belts if you were covered while you're under workers' comp, while you're under that coverage. In other words, if you drive for a living, if you are a courier, if you are a salesperson or something, and you're injured, and you'd be covered by workers' comp, you'd have to have a seatbelt on. And then that's where, when I started talking to people about it, I didn't go to a draft, but I got into a lot of these gray areas of whether you want to require it when you're talking about retrofitting and all of this. And I didn't even think about the fact that they could be violating the law by retrofitting, but it just got to the point where I thought that wasn't very practical. And I'm not sure all of this really is necessary.
It feels to me like there are several unanswered questions, and perhaps you need time to find the answers to all of this. I'm not sure if the chair plans to continue the hearing at any time. I assume that he does.
Why don't we just set it aside?
Yeah, I think I would like to set that particular question aside and have you get back to us. Other questions from the committee? It looks like we are losing people here one by one. Other questions or comments related to House Bill 2207? Looks like Mr. Lee has returned with copies of the standards. Obviously moved very quickly.
Madam Chair,
yes.
Are the standards, Department of Education has adopted the federal standards for seatbelts. Do you adopt the same ones, or is there some deviation from the current standard federal regulations?
Madam Chair, Steve, we have adopted the federal standards.
Okay. There are two sheets.
Oh, there are two sheets. Are there particular questions in relation to the standards? I know Representative Jolin was interested, and she stepped out for a moment.
Madam Chair.
Yes. Representative Bergeron.
You mentioned a while ago that it's not against the law to take the seatbelt out of a vehicle. Is that right?
Madam Chair, Representative Brigiotti, there's nothing in the law that I'm aware of that prevents someone from removing a seatbelt.
Is that right? Boy, I'd have done that a long time ago if that was the case.
Madam Chair.
Yes, Representative Hayden.
However, may I ask Representative Brigiotti if he were going to carry a 15-year-old neighbor, would he hurriedly go out there with a wrench and reinstall those?
Oh, I'd take it out of there so it wouldn't have to strap him in. I don't believe in that law.
But there is such a law, as I recall.
I know there is. But they went over my dead body.
I feel like perhaps we're getting a little mired down in this, that we don't have the opportunity to look at this right now, and that perhaps we've proposed some questions that you would need to respond to. So I would like to close the hearing on 2207 if there are no further comments or questions, and thank you. I'm sure we'll be in touch. Now it looks like we're moving into a work session on House Bill 2206. Okay, 2206. Mr. Lee, I'm going to ask you to remind people, if you would, what this is about.
Madam Chair, members, we had a public hearing on this bill Tuesday of this week. Mm-hmm. It is the vehicle dealer bill that relates to snowmobile, all-terrain vehicle, motorcycle, moped dealers as opposed to driver dealers, and creating the two separate bonds and a single dealer licensing and fee. We had only scheduled for a public hearing on Tuesday, therefore the committee could not take action, and I move it to a work session today. Motor vehicles testified. There were other people from the dealers in the audience, and no one offered any opposition to the bill at that time.
Comments, questions from the committee?
Go ahead.
I was going to move it.
Well, I was too.
Okay, go ahead. I got to do it twice.
That's right, you have.
Representative Brigiotti.
I move to the floor of the House 2206 with a due pass recommendation.
I think it's necessary to call the roll. Would you please call the roll?
Representatives Hayden.
Aye.
Norris.
Aye.
Young.
Aye.
Brigiotti.
Aye.
Madam Chair.
Aye. We just voted yes on to move House Bill 2206 to the floor, and this particular motion authorizes single bond and certificate fee payment for vehicle dealers, creates an offense of failure to exhibit a dealer certificate. Okay, looks like we're moving now into a work session on House Bill 2208. And Mr. Lee, if you would refresh us on that one.
Okay, Madam Chair, members, this was the bill that, for the most part, other than Section 1 of the bill, Section 2, there were some minor and not large substantive changes to the driver licensing section of the law. The part members may remember that took quite a bit of discussion was Section 1 of the bill that related to emergency driver permits and who could get those and why the driving privileges are suspended. As the chairman stated earlier, LC 2338 addresses some of the concerns raised by members at that time, and so perhaps those issues will be addressed in that bill. there were no amendments proposed at the time of the public hearing. The Motor Vehicles Division did submit testimony, which is in his files. Antonio DiLorenzo of the Motor Vehicles Division is here to answer any questions that members may have.
Okay, we are open for work session. Are there comments or questions from members?
Now, Madam Chair.
Yes, Representative Hayden.
This was the bill that we had some discussion on about young people in parks in possession of alcohol whose driving privileges could be impinged because of that possession. Is that correct?
I think that discussion came out of this bill, and then we have introduced a bill this morning, or at least a potential bill dealing with that, as I understand.
Mm-hmm. Does this bill deal with that?
I think it doesn't.
2208, it does
no,
not.
No, that it engendered our discussion of that subject, but it does not.
All right.
Yes.
Madam Chair, that section of law, like Madam Chair did, it just started the conversation. What the amendment to the section of law is in this bill is that it makes it clear in the law that it does apply to kids to and from school. it had gotten broadened somehow during revision. It's back again to tighten up to just apply to children or kids under 16 that had the suspension for that reason. it also did a couple of other things. It replaced permit where license should have been in the law, and allows them to reinstate ID cards after being suspended for false applications, and those are the two minor changes it makes.
Any further questions or comments? Representative Young.
Yes, Madam Chair, I would move House Bill 2208 to the floor with the due pass recommendation.
Representative Young has moved House Bill 2208 to the floor. Could we have a roll call, please?
Representative Brigiani?
Aye.
Hayden?
Aye.
Norris?
Aye.
Peterson?
Aye.
Young?
Aye.
Representative, we have passed to the floor House Bill 2208, which restricts eligibility for emergency driver permits for certain persons. Representative Young, would you carry that bill, please? And I failed to ask someone to carry House Bill 2206. Representative Brigiani, will you please?
Madam Chair, I wonder if our vote shouldn't have been a unanimous instead of a roll call.
That's probably easier.
Well, it shows that everybody's in favor, and I'm sure they are. If there's any questions, they can challenge it on the floor.
Fine. Will you show that as a unanimous vote?
The other votes, too.
Yes, and House Bill 2206.
Yeah,
thank
the
you.
Rest of it.
That, I understand, will allow the chair to be on board, which I'm sure he is.
And Peg, too, that's not here, too.
Okay, moving on to House Bill 2213. Yes, Mr.
Lee. Madam Chair, members, I'd like to move back into somewhat of a public hearing on this bill, in that there were some amendments proposed in the course of the testimony by the Motor Vehicles Division that really did not, the committee didn't take action and say, yes, we are questioning the witness about the amendments, and Motor Vehicles would like the opportunity, I think, to submit those amendments to the committee again. So Tony DiLorenzo is here to do that.
Okay, Mr. DiLorenzo, if you would come forward, please.
Tony DiLorenzo, Motor Vehicles Division. I take it that you didn't want a complete reprise on the testimony, so I will just focus on the proposed amendment.
Excuse me, do we have a copy of that amendment?
We do.
It's attached to their testimony, dated January 27.
You must have lost it. Well, that's all right. Go ahead.
Was that amendment given to us today?
No, it was in the file from the last the public hearing.
Okay. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. We actually have two amendments for proposed. One that I did talk about the other day, and one that I forgot to mention, although it was in the written testimony.
22.
Excuse me for being gone there, but
2206.
We just about finished it.
We're now looking at the amendment on 2213.
Okay, fine. Thanks a lot. Sorry, but I had to be on TV, you know.
Oh,
everything comes before that.
Mr. Chair, I prefaced my remarks to this amendment the other day by asking if you'd ever had a situation where you made a decision one day and then a few days later got the feeling that maybe you hadn't made the best decision. Maybe you'd like to reconsider that.
Mm-hmm.
We try not to do that very often when it concerns legislation, but this is one time where we think maybe our original recommendation was was not the best. Take you back. The old motor vehicle code gave us some authority to suspend people when we were notified that they'd, Oregon residents, we were notified they were suspended in another state. Somehow in the code rewrite, and that authority applied only to certain suspensions under the financial responsibility code in the old law, but in the rewrite, somehow that authority got broadened such that it now requires us to suspend anybody anytime we get a notice that they've been suspended in another state, and to require that they file proof of financial responsibility for 3 years. Suddenly that authority now applies not just to financial responsibility matters and serious traffic offenses, but all of a sudden we're now, it applies to fail to appear suspensions, all kinds of things. So our original thought was, and it also seemed to conflict in a way with the driver license compact. The compact says we do to you here in Oregon based on convictions from out of state, based on Oregon law, whereas this statute seems to say that we, in effect, punish you based on whatever the law was in the other state. So our first inclination was simply to scrap this entire thing, and that's what the bill does. It does away with that authority altogether. But we've had some second thoughts, and we think that there may be some situations where